Hey, in like a lamb, out like a lion. How to get maximum results in your business. Welcome to our March teleseminar. Can you believe 2 months have gone by? For some of you, you've been experiencing amazing growth, while others are kind of stuck in the same old place, or even for some experiencing setbacks. Not to paint a picture of gloom and doom, I wanted to just give you a little idea. I just recently mailed out a flyer for my upcoming tournament, the Long Island Open Karate Championship. This is the 18th year that I've been running this event. Now, I sent out about 1,400 flyers to my mailing list to martial arts school owners within the New York area, from the tip of Montauk Point to Albany, New York. I received nearly 400 flyers back with no forwarding addresses saying that they're no longer in business, basically. What makes that so interesting is that, more unbelievably, that my mailing list had added on, from what I had, 500 new locations. So I had 500 new school owners that either were very brave or, mentally disturbed to open up a business in this, what we call this, tumultuous society or, depressed or recessed kind of society. But anyway, what I thought was interesting was the 500 new schools open. So if I added them to my existing database of 1,400, I would have 1,900 schools. But last year's mailing list was only 1,440 schools. So what that told me was that 500 new schools open, 400 returned back to me, so nearly 900 schools had closed down. Now, I don't know if they closed or maybe they downsized, they moved from their location to their garage, but this is just New York State. So when I look at my numbers, that's about 40% of the people who were open last year are now closed this year. Does that mean that it's the economy that's doing that? That's a question that we should really think about. Again, while this makes the future sound bad, it's not something that we should focus on. As in any situation, there are two ways to always look at every scenario, either from the glass half full or the glass half empty, from the good side or the bad side. I choose to look at everything from the good side, even though that sometimes it's very difficult to do that. For those of you who listen to me regularly or have heard me in the past, I'm a pretty positive person. I try to always stay that way, even in down times or even in times of stress, when I could easily be looking at things negatively. So what am I going to suggest to you to make your year a better year? That's a good question, right? Before I go ahead and tell you that, I want to give you a series of questions that you must ask yourself. I'm going to ask you to write them down when I say them. So get your pens handy or get your computer fingers ready, because I truly want you to do some self-discovery and really take inventory on the questions later on, either later on today or no later than tomorrow. Now, I say later on today or tomorrow because it shouldn't be next month or next week. And, it's interesting. I listen to a lot of Tony Robbins' audio tapes. It's exciting. He's like my mentor. I met him once in person. He's going to be at the Super Show this year as one of the keynote speakers. So I'm just, really excited about that. But I know Tony Robbins does a monthly newsletter, which I highly recommend you guys get. And each month he does a little topic, and then he has other interviews with people. But there are points in the tape where he says, stop the tape and write this down. And then he pauses for a second and he says, I mean it, stop the tape and write this down. So I really want to stress to you that it's important that you do this, write down these questions, and then actually evaluate the questions and do them within the next day or two. So again, you have to strike while the iron is hot. If not, the impact is lost, and it won't help you achieve greatness. And I know this may make sense to you as you listen, but life has a funny way of putting obstacles in our path that take priority and seem to disengage us from the things that are important. So if you're ready, get that pen handy, get that computer hand ready. So here are the five questions. Number one, what are you actually doing to market your school? Again, I'll repeat. What are you actually doing to market your school? Two, what have you done lately to grow your business internally? Number two, what have you done lately to grow your business internally? Number three, what are you doing that will benefit your bottom line at the end of the year? Again, number three, what are you doing that will benefit your bottom line at the end of the year? Four, what is it you're doing to prepare yourself for the future? Number four, again, what is it you are doing to prepare yourself for the future? Five, what works and what doesn't work within your school? Number five, what works and what doesn't work within your school? Let me quickly read all five of those again in case you missed. Number one, what are you actually doing to market your school? Number two, what have you done lately to grow your business internally? Three, what are you doing that will benefit your bottom line at the end of the year? Four, what is it you are doing to prepare yourself for the future? And five, what works and what doesn't work within your school? Now, let me repeat my questions in the form of the question, and then I'll give you an answer in case you missed it. And we're going to discuss these things, and I'll explain to you, this is not just motivational speaking. This is not just for you to do some inventory, self-inventory. But I really want you to think about these questions, because if you do and you make changes within your school, even if you're a highly successful school owner, these questions are going to help you change the way you look at your business. So here goes. Number one, what are you actually doing to market your school? Now, I can't tell you how often I have said this in teleseminars, on conference calls, and dealing with my elite consulting clients. There's a rule in business that you have to make your own luck. You can't wait for luck to happen. You have to make your own luck. Be the future. See the future. Remember the guy in Caddyshack, Chevy Chase's character, Ty, I believe his name was, saying in that Caddyshack, be the ball, see the ball, right? And he made those funny sounds. You know, we need to realize that if we're not doing it, no one else will do it for us. Of course, the better you get at delegating, the more you'll get done, and also the more time you'll have for yourself to do other things, more important things, or even to relax. But the simple reality and fact is that I see is people sit back and don't do anything. They sit on their hands. Really, they're sitting on their lazy butts. I know this sounds harsh, but unless you are filthy rich and independently wealthy, then you have no right to sit back. Do not get comfortable. Do not rest until your time is due. I continually tell myself this every day, yet I'm the owner. I am the owner, and I sometimes make choices that, you know, that I shouldn't. I realize that if I'm not working on growing my business, then I'm not going to get the results that I expect. What is it that you're doing to market your school? Jay Abraham, the author of Guerrilla Marketing, has said, even a really bad marketing plan is better than no marketing plan at all. Before I move on, I must say that sometimes taking the time to develop a professionally done campaign is great. But if you're going to take months and months and months to do it, then you better do something average in the meantime. Are you doing any of the things that you should be doing? Are you doing just a little bit here and there? Are you taking that shotgun approach by just firing out things, you know, and with no system, no organization? I want you to email me if you can, and I'm going to send you, if you email me, the 200 Guerrilla Marketing Tips. We also sent it out in a newsletter for the Member Solutions newsletter just recently. Email me. My email is renshi, Renshi, L-I, like Long Island, ninja, N-I-N-J-A at AOL.com. That's Renshi, L-I, ninja at AOL.com. So again, let me repeat that question or that statement. Even a really bad marketing plan is better than no marketing plan at all. You may wonder, why do I bring this up? I cannot tell you. It's shocking to me at how many people I talk to that are wondering why they're not bringing people in, but they're really not doing all that much about bringing people in. So that's something that you should think about. Are you marketing? How much are you marketing? And what can you do better at what you're doing right now? Okay, number two, what have you done lately to grow your business internally? The word internally is important because I'm not talking about outside-in marketing, meaning like setting an ad in the paper or, you know, getting on the radio or TV. That's all just something that you do. But contrary to popular consulting advice that runs rampant in our industry, it is not about the next best thing. I want to be really clear on this because some people might not like what I have to say. But while it's great that we've received a push from the mixed martial arts, the MMA community, and the martial arts, mixed martial arts community, it really doesn't matter what you teach if you're terrible at it and if you run an unprofessional school. I've heard consultants recently, I've heard people of unbelievable stature, supposedly, in our consulting industry speak, and they hitch their bandwagon to the MMA, the mixed martial arts. The reason being is that they're really not all the greatest consultants in the world, because what they're doing is they're going after the next biggest fad. Now, allow me to first explain before you shake your head and shut me out, because if you're an MMA school, that's great. But I'm not saying that the MMA isn't great. What I'm saying is You don't have to follow the fads. Remember, I first was at the first Maya Super Show, and the fad was kickboxing, cardio kickboxing, without mentioning the name of the famous person. Then it became self-defense systems, you know, some of the elite kind of, you know, Israeli fighting systems, all good, all of those self-defense systems. Then there were exercise programs about losing weight and dieting and tying that into your martial arts school. Now it's the MMA. Schools are running crazy to redefine themselves, but in reality, they're going to do this every few years if they follow the trends. Allow me to use religion as an example. There are many religions and no lack of followers. They're all very similar, but also have extreme differences. Judaism, Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, you know, whatever, Muslim and so on. Do you see each religion running to change their identity every few years, or do they continue to plug along and teach what they believe in? If it's real, it'll stand the test of time. So the question is your martial art real, and will it stand the test of time? The question is, have you done your due diligence to make this happen? The question being, what have you done internally to make your business grow? Are you working on your curriculum? Are you working on your teaching methods? Are you working on how you present it all in a sales presentation? Are you working on putting in enough time into branding your name of your school, what you do, and reach out to the community to communicate the reasons why XYZ Karate is unique, special, and important, an important part of the community? What are you doing to establish your name within the community? I can't tell you at how many martial arts schools I see that don't really have a slogan or a logo. And, you know, how do you expect in this world we live where there's nothing but professional marketing on iPods and podcasts and email and Facebook and MySpace and whatever and the radio, TV and the newspaper projecting professional images? Marketing companies charge millions of dollars to get a company's name recognized in our kind of noisy world of marketing, so to speak, what I call white noise. So my question to you is, what are you doing to establish your school, your name, and why are you unique? Are you actually selling that to the people, or are you just like another commodity? I think that the martial arts, not think, I know, that the martial arts, as more and more as we become mainstream, we're going to become more and more a commodity. People will think that karate school A, B, and C are all the same. It doesn't matter if one is phenomenal and the instructor's got 40 years of experience and he is a great teacher and he's put his life into training people to become great teachers, and there's a new guy with 2 years experience opening down the road. They're going to think that A, B, and C are exactly the same because it's becoming mainstream. And I'm finding that on a more regular basis. Anyway, of course, I can give you a million ideas on how you could do this to find an identity and how to do that. If you'd like, again, just email me. But be specific on what you want. Some people say, I want that stuff you talked about on the teleseminar, and I talk about a lot, so I don't know what to send to people. So email me and say, I'd like ideas on branding my school. And again, RenshiLINinja@AOL.com. The first one you're going to ask for is 200 guerrilla marketing tips. And if you want it all, ask for it all, but tell me specifically what it is. Number three, what are you doing that will benefit your bottom line at the end of the year? Now, I've written a few articles on this, and I think one is going to come out, or it just came out recently, and it's called Discovering Gold Under Your Tatami Mats. Tatami mats meaning the mats on the floor, like Swain mats or zebra mats or whatever. What the heck am I talking about, you're probably saying. Simply put, my question is, are you really looking at your school like it were, you know, an abacus? Remember the old adding tool that they used in ancient times? This ancient tool is used to add figures quickly, right? It's not a calculator. Are we using an antiquated martial art calculator? This is my question. Are we thinking that our school is based on students still? For example, when I talk to clients, I'll say to them, how are you doing with your student enrollment? And they'll tell me. And then I'll say, well, how much money would you like to make, or what would be your goal at the end of the year? And they'll say, I don't know, let's just pretend they went from 1,000, they want to go to 2,000 a month in billing volume, right? So they'll say, how do you do that? I'll ask them. And they'll say, well, I just have to add on, you know, 10 more students. But the old martial art calculator is always about student enrollment. And trust me, I've been there. I've had as many as 1,200 students in my schools, you know, and Now I look at things from a whole different point of view. I want to look at it with a different martial art calculator. Okay, and again, this could be my entire seminar. But this is a discoverer. I find this to be a discoverer in me, a discoverer. I'm more of a discoverer. I can come into any school in the world and find undiscovered money. So if you want to invite me to your school, I guarantee you, you're going to end up making a bigger profit on your school because my brain is just wired that way. Really, what I look for is what's missing. I guess this is the discoverer in me. You know, I just recently spoke to one of my elite clients, my one-on-one clients, these individual school owners who talk to me on the phone 40 minutes a week, and we have homework assignments, and we work on their schools every step of the way. I don't just throw stuff at them, but we work on specific areas. And we spoke this time about retail. I asked, how's their retail going? And they said that they do about $1,000 a month, which is not bad when you think about it, $1,000 a month in retail. I asked what they sold, and of course I got the typical response, uniforms, some fighting gear, some miscellaneous weaponry for whatever they do. Of course, these are all purchased from one of those elite, you know, supply companies that are out there. There's many of them, but there's a few really good ones. And I then asked, what do you do to break down in your martial arts school your student base? For example, to make a long story short, I asked them, what was the specific clientele that they had in their school? So just to cut the story short, we then determined that they had 3 to 5 year olds, 5 to 8 year olds, youth class, and adults. And I asked what their population was, their biggest population, and they said they had, a big group of 60 little kids from 3 to 5 years old. I asked them at that point, what are you doing to retail to them? And they said, well, we sell the pad blocker kid and this kid and the dragon thing, blah, 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 blah. This could have been a program response. I almost could have said it, and, you know, I could have mouthed the words as they were saying it. So I asked them, how many of those specialty items that you have do you sell? And they laughed and chuckled and said, not many. So I ask all of you, are you really thinking outside the box or thinking like a business owner? And, for example, here's an example. If you owned a toy store and you were selling toys to kids, would you only have one of those blocker sets and just a few other items in your store? Now, I'm not saying that you need to stock and inventory tons of merchandise because it's only a portion of your business, but you have to have stuff that is appealing to that marketplace, to those kids, to those 3 to 5 year olds, and you have to have it available at the spur of the moment for purchase. Here's a real quick example that I've had experience in my school. For about 2 years, we had a wall, you know, slat wall filled with, you know, those typical belt keychains, all the different colors, white through black, those little plastic headgear keychains. We had rubber shuriken, suction cup throwing stars, and then rubber throwing stars. We had those bracelets that say, you know, fearless and strong and motivation and all that. Basically, for 2 years, they just did nothing but collect dust. I, like a good retailer, moved them around from location to location within my store, and still nothing happened. Finally, I got tired of cleaning them, so I took them all and threw them in a box. About 2 months went by, and I decided, hey, listen, I might as well just give these things away, during my birthday parties, et cetera, et cetera. But after a while, I said, you know what, I'm going to throw these on the counter right near where I talk to my clients. So I had like a little metal box, square box, that was like a planter. And I painted it white so it looked nice. And I put it on the counter, and I threw all this stuff in this white box right where most people pay for their drinks and they ask questions. And then I threw all the merchandise, no order, just dropped it in this box. And what happened was amazing. I sold all of it, just like that. Just like that. I actually had to so far order this a few times over because those same items that collected dust and sat on my wall have been selling like hotcakes. Why? The moral of the story is that you sometimes need to find the location. You have to put it in people's spaces. You have to educate them. You have to ask yourselves, what are you selling? Is it appealing? And what can you sell that's going to be profitable and educational? Would you have a store with one item? Or are you going to lose money or lose out on money because you just don't have what people are purchasing? I'm not sure that I missed it. I know I missed out on this, but think about this. Stationery store and card stores throughout the country made a fortune on that toy, Webkinz. Why didn't I go out and buy them? Why didn't I locate a distributor I can't answer you that because I wasn't thinking that way. Because if I did, with all the kids in my school, I would have sold tons of Webkinz. Why did I miss on that opportunity? Because I wasn't thinking about the trend, about what people were purchasing. I was thinking like a martial artist. I'm a karate school, I'll sell karate gear. I'm a karate guy, I'll sell a karate t-shirt. I'll sell my school t-shirt. But you know what? Imagine that I had Webkinz with a big sign that said Webkinz sold here. Imagine how much of the general population would have came in to purchase Webkinz in my store, and with each Webkinz, I could have given them a two-week free pass to sign up for a trial class of lessons in my school. My thing for you is think out of the box. Again, email me. The topic is 15 hot selling item checklist. 15 hot selling item checklist, and I'll let you know what's doing well in my martial arts store that I have called The Touches In. Now, number four, what is it that you're doing to prepare yourself for the future? Think about that question for a quick second. What is it that you're doing to prepare yourself for the future? This question may be a bit odd, but as Michael Gerber, the author of The E-Myth, which I highly recommend, he was also a keynote speaker at the Maya Super Show, I recommend it because the book is really amazing. He asks in his book, what is your crap-out date? I don't really like the way he put it, your crap-out date. He wants to know, what is it that you're going to do, and how long do you intend to do it? Do you intend on teaching till the day you die? Do you expect to teach all the beginner classes? Do you want to deal with the parents of all the whining children in your school forever? Or do you want to have people help you with that? Do you want to have to do all the promotions from the day, after week, after week? Do you want to be in charge of all the marketing? The question is, what is your plan of action? What is it that you need to do to prepare for your future? Now, me personally, I've set in action many years ago, my five-year plan. My five-year plan was supposed to end at the age 45. I'm now 44. With a quick change in the economy and stepping back a little because I never expected this to be the way it is, I still think that I'm still kind of on track. I may be a year or two pushed back, I think. But my goal was, and let me read a few of these things to you so maybe you're going to be thinking the same way. My goal is to scale back immensely in the amount of classes that I teach, which I've done. To some extent, it's been a real hard transition because I went from being the main teacher with the most experience, the most excitement, the most charisma, to having a bunch of my teachers that are not as experienced as me teaching the classes. And it's kind of, you know, taking me back a little, lost some students here and there. People are saying, oh, you know, you don't teach as much anymore, but I'm building a whole new model. So my goal was to scale back, and I have. I want to focus mostly teaching of the high ranks, my black belts, and my instructors. I am now recording my entire curriculum on DVD so that anyone can easily see what is to be done, how to do it without any question at all. My instructors could see it. I could give it to my students. I've started a rather intense one-time-per-month training program for instructors and future instructors in my school. I've also started to phase myself out of certain day-to-day operations, putting more and more responsibility into the hands of the capable. And I have to say, into the hands of the capable. That's an entire seminar altogether. But I would love to be retired out by 48 years old. When I say retired out, that doesn't mean I'm going to sit home and move to Florida, you know, no insult, Kathy, to Florida because people like to retire there and just, you know, end up, you know, retiring and growing old and dying. But I want to retire out to the point where I'm not in the day-to-day operations. I want to take the time to maybe do a martial art tour, continually teach seminars on business consulting, as well as write books and consulting, you know, one-on-one elite clients, and I want to enjoy the rest of my life doing what I want. I intend on liquidating a good portion of all the real estate that I've built up over the years and just enjoy my life with my family. But as long as I put some things in place, my daughter will have a rather bright future. But my question is for you, have you really taken the time to even think about your future, or are you just hoping that it goes in the direction that you want? Or that you imagine. Remember, the quote is, luck is made, it's not found. So, as in Caddyshack, make your future, be your future, right? So, okay, number five is, what works and what doesn't work? This is an important thing to hear, you know. The question is one of the least asked and most avoided questions. The reason why this is such a scary question for people is the fear of failure. Or feeling that you're not doing what you're supposed to do, or believing that maybe you're a little lazy, which I believe I'm a little lazy. When I talk to people on my one-on-one calls, which I, you know, do quite often through Member Solutions, we do 20-minute calls, you know, so mostly I point out the obvious to people. What I consider is common sense. And as I've said in the past, common sense is not so common. But the reality is this: common sense is learned from trial and error, from experience. Hopefully, if you've tried and failed or tried and succeeded, you can look back and learn a lesson from it. The problem is, without practice, there is no common sense. You know, we probably, and I'm sure you have, you look at certain people and you go like, I can't believe they just did that, and you shake your head. But the problem is with people is that sometimes they just have no experience in what we would consider to be common sense. For example, a builder may say that you have to build your house at a specific measurement with joists and supports and put them at such and such a dimension and distance apart. And to them, that's just common sense. To a builder, it should be common sense. But to the average everyday person, it's certainly not. For Donald Trump, there are things in his life that have become second nature when he's running his business and doing business deals. He's built up those business muscles. But in reality, to the layperson, it's like talking physics to a third grader. I've sometimes myself have had a hard time understanding my daughter's fourth grade math homework. Why is it that you think that show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader, is so popular? Some of the things that they know, the fifth graders, is fresh in their mind, but we've forgotten them. That's like my students who are black belts forget their white belt kata. So what is it that you're doing to develop your business sense? What is it you're doing to grow yourself as a business person, to educate yourself? What is it that you're doing on a daily basis to educate yourself and break down barriers and move forward? What systems are you using in your school? When was the last time that you looked at the systems that you're using and asked yourself the question, is this a waste of time and money? Is this system working? Have you ever asked yourself, if you're doing the system that you have in place 100% of your ability, are you good at it? I continually ask people, and you've heard me talk about this if you've listened to me at all, about 2-4-6-8-10-week calls. For those of you who know me, I talk about this on a regular basis. I have some of my clients that have actually used this to quadruple their school, this one simple little system. Now, I've asked people this question. I get answers sometimes. I'll say, do you do 2-4-6-8-10-week calls? And people say, yes. Then they follow up the statement with, not that often, or not that well, or not as well as I should be. Now, I ask you the question, if I ask, do you know how to drive, and you said yes, but every time I go out, I simply run people over, I would say that you're a danger to yourself and society. So ask yourself if you are a danger to your own business. Are you helping yourself or are you hurting yourself? If you're not taking a system and working it fully, then what the heck is the sense of doing it at all? Ask yourself that. Remember, if you're taking time away from doing something else that's working to do something halfway or terribly, maybe it's time that you axe that system. Could you take time to put that into something that you're doing really well and possibly maximize that area? For example, what's the sense of throwing events like parent-teacher nights or parents' night outs or movie nights if they're not giving you a fair return? So here's another example of me with some of my elite clients. Just recently, I talked to another one of the elite clients, and they held a bully event. He told me that he promoted the heck out of it and had a fair return. I asked him, the first question I asked was, how many people showed up? And he said about 30. And I said, you know, that's not a bad event. 30 times whatever, let's pretend it was, you know, $25, you know, or let's say it's $50. You know, so, you know, he made a few hundred dollars, right? Now, my next question was, how many people could have gone to the event? We don't look at this all the time. What we look at is the result, but we don't ask ourselves the question, was the result I could have gotten if I did this better? Now, here's what I'm trying to say. The question would turn out to be that the seminar was geared to his clientele of 4 to 12-year-olds. I asked him how many kids potentially could have gone to the seminar, and when he thought about it, he said about 100 kids. But only 30% of those people actually came to the event. Now, even though that 30% is better than zero, the question remains, how do you work the next event so that you get a higher return, maybe 50%, and then get better at promoting and get 60 or 70%? I suggested just simply taking those 70 people that didn't attend and asking them why they didn't attend, making individual phone calls. Hi, Mrs. Jones. This is Kiyoshi Ali from Long Island Ninjutsu Centers. We just recently held an event called the Parents Night Out, which was a blah, blah, blah event, and you guys didn't make it to the event. And I'm just wondering, did we drop the ball? Was there something that we did wrong? Did we not promote it well? You know, was it a price point? Was it too expensive? Does your kid feel that it wasn't good for them? Well, anyway, I told this client to do that, and they did, and they called some of the 70 students, and they got answers like, which were unbelievably powerful, that some of the parents didn't realize it was good for their child. They didn't realize it was good for their child. Again, realize means that we didn't sell them. We didn't promote it. We didn't communicate. They didn't really see the benefit in the program was another answer. In other words, we didn't sell it. We didn't promote it. We didn't educate. We didn't communicate. So you have to ask yourself, what are you going to do the next time you do an event to make this better? I suggest now maybe going back and finding out all the people over the years by looking at your student database of 3 to 5 year olds, let's say, and find out who's coming to the events and who isn't. Over the years, you're going to find that the majority of people who go to these events are the same people over and over and over again, and there's a pocket of people that hardly attend any of the events. We have to uncover the gold under the tatami mat by finding out why those people are not going to the events, and then maybe give them a really big discount, give them 50% off, because what we want to do is we want to start creating a buying habit. I suggest giving them that discount and start treating them or educating them, in lack of better words, training them to be more qualified buyers. Get them to break the cycle of noncompliance and fear, right? Right now, I'm sure all you school owners that are listening, in this time of our society, we're hearing more fear of uncertainty. You know, hey, Kiyoshi Ali, can I sign a, you know, and I don't do this, a 6-month agreement instead of a year, because we don't know where we're going to be in 6 months. Well, you know what? We've never known where we were going to be in 6 months. It's just that now the looking into the future, it seems that it's going in a specific direction, and most people feel, even if their job is secure, there is a possibility that they may go in that direction. So we have to reassure people and keep them thinking positively. Of course, the president this time is talking straight from the hip, right? But he's scaring people. Nothing wrong with that, because over the years we've kind of fluffed over things, and that's why everyone had that ostrich mentality where their head was in the sand, and no matter how bad things were, they didn't listen. Here's another really great example on this topic. What is your retention like in your school? Ask yourself that question. Now, there are a few theories of retention, and just recently, well, not recently, a few months ago, Kathy and Joe Gallia, one of the owners of Member Solutions, and I met, and we talked about retention. And Joe and I kind of had a conflicting thought on this, but we kind of were on the same page, but his philosophy on it was a little different than mine, but no one was right or wrong, and I'll tell you what I mean. For example, if you have 100 students in January, and then you go through an entire 12-month year, and you look at your schedule next year in January, and you have 100 students, technically you have 100% retention. While this is true, it could be the same in dollar value, that if you had $100,000 made in January next year by year and you made $100,000, your business is staying at 100%. It didn't grow. It didn't go down. But at year end, you're maintaining your year to year, month to month. But retention is a little bit more complicated in my opinion, because the bottom line is not about you. It's about who's coming and going through the door. Now, it's who joined and who quit? What rank did they stop at? What age group are they? Male or female? Boy or girl? Adult, kid, teen, little warriors, whatever you call it, right? These are statistics that are done in, you know, that TV show. You have to become that guy, Dr. House, you know, from House, the way he analyzes things. You know, we need to know at the end of the year, looking at our statistics, that if we lost 60 students and they were all spread out across the board, and there was real no rhyme or reason, that's a good thing, that we just lost 60 people. But we also want to find out why. But if we lost, out of the 60, 40 of them, 3 to 5 year olds, and out of the 40, 25 or 30 of them were little girls instead of little boys, right then and there, that's going to give us a diagnosis of what we're doing right or wrong. And there's a little bunch of, there's a bunch of stuff that we should look at. But if we're seeing that there are pockets of people joining and quitting, maybe we're not so good at teaching those little kids. Either we're going to get better at it or we need to get out. If we notice that we've lost all adults, then we know what we need to work on. We can go in even a step further and say we lost all adults, but most of them were women, so that tells us something even more. We can look at all that information and make subtle adjustments or changes that we're going to do to be helpful to our retention. Once the change is made, we will see where we can fix. For example, we've heard over and over and over again the analogy of, you know, lock the back door, fill the holes in the bucket, plug the holes in the boat or the canoe. What's interesting, though, is most people are listening now to that, but they're running over and plugging a hole, which is great, but they don't realize that they have on cleats or spiked shoes. So as they plug a hole, they open another hole. You know, so we're kind of working on what we call catch-up. We're working on, you know, Band-Aids of the solution. What we need to do is look at it in detail and really evaluate where we're at and where we want to be. We have to find out what's working and what isn't working, and we have to make those necessary changes. I recommend to clients that I talk to on a regular basis and through my emails that they have to take a look at what they see as being bad with their business, but they also have to ask their clients, the students or the parents, what their opinion is. Sometimes that's quite painful because people are petty, and I've done questionnaires, and you know, I've sent them out, and people say mean things and nasty things, and you know, there are going to be those few people out there that are just bitter and negative, but you have to look at it and say, if the majority of people are saying that your adult classes suck, for lack of better words, maybe we need to adjust that. You know, if people are saying, and I'll give you an example, I'll use myself as an example, that we went from a model in my four schools that we had one set instructor that was the main focus of the school. A lot of schools are done that way because you're the owner, but in multiple schools, I had one instructor that I put in the head, sensei so-and-so in this location. And then what I found was, when those people, and eventually they leave, 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road, 5 years, they're going to open up their own school or they're going to quit and go into another profession. And if I keep putting trust and building my organization on that one individual, when they leave, the school population, the students, the parents, the organization is devastated. So I started a new model within my four schools, and I have 6 full-time instructors that teach within the four schools. And they all teach on different days at each location. So there's each school is going to get used to those 6 different instructors. So a parent may say to me, and initially they did, we don't have one mentor. I want my kid to have one mentor. And I said, no, you have 5 mentors. And they said, well, it's like school. I have one teacher for 9 months, and my kid gets used to them and is able to learn from them, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, well, you're going to have 6 people that are going to be there. And hopefully you're going to be here longer than 6 or 8 months or a year. You're going to be here for a long term. So if Joe Schmo, my one black belt, quits, which I just recently had one guy that was with me for 13 years quit and go open up his own location, steal my entire database, and, you know, go out and you know, recruiting my students. So he was that old model. But if I had 5 people, those people would be more – they would be more cemented and more committed and more loyal to the organization, to the school, to the system, to the curriculum, not to the personality. That's why I often ask business owners that run martial arts schools, is your business sellable? If you're not there, can you sell your school? Or will you be able to sell it, or will it just disappear once you pull yourself out of the equation? Most multiple school owners, and you know, I used to frown upon this because I thought they were all lazy. And I apologize that I even thought that way, was that they need to pull themselves out of the mix, so to speak, because you can't run a large organization and be in the mix. You just don't have enough time in the day and energy and well, energy is the main thing because you can't. You just don't have the time. I used to teach, you know, in my 4 schools at least twice a month in all of my schools. So, you know, you're looking at myself, you know, going to all those schools and the main headquarters school. I was teaching, you know, 20, 25 days myself, but people would look at me and go, well, we haven't seen you all that much, you know, after I was there, you know, once a week or whatever. It was draining on me, and I just couldn't do it anymore. I've been doing this for, you know, teaching for 18 years and running a school for 18 years, teaching for much more than 18 years, and being in the martial arts for 41 years. So I want to find out where I'm going to go. Anyway, so far, so good. I wanted to take some time. It's been 47 minutes that I've been talking solid. I think, Kathy, that's my limit so far. And I wanted to open up the line.
Is that a record? Questions.
That's my record right now, that I've nonstop chatter. And you know me, I'm so shy, and I really don't like to talk. So that was a stretch for me, right?
Right.
So anyway, do we have questions from anyone on the lines or on the computer that I can answer? Hello?
Well, let's – hi, go right ahead.
Yeah.
I don't know if I just take myself on mute or off mute. This is John.
So we hear you, so you're all good.
Oh, great. Okay, thank you. That was absolutely excellent. I've got two pages of notes here.
I recognize your voice, so
how
are you?
I'm doing
yes,
well.
Sir.
This is Sifu John. I'm the Hung Ga teacher down in Delaware, University of Delaware territory.
Yes.
One thing that I think you came close to touching on, which I've been trying to explore personally, is with the economy the way it is, and with real estate being the way it is now, has anyone or could you offer any experience in owning the real estate versus renting the real estate that you're conducting
Absolutely.
Classes?
Well, let me give you this example because I do own, you know, I own about, I have four schools. Out of the four schools, three of them I own the buildings. One of them I rent. So I could kind of look from two areas, and I have a bunch of real estate in residential homes and some other commercial buildings as well. Over the years, I like went full force ahead, and I was buying like a madman, you know. And there are two things to this. Now the economy has dried up to a certain extent for me in Long Island, so now I'm forced to always have to pay this bill. So the reason why I'm saying this is that you have to ask yourself a question: do you want to be an owner-occupied business? You know, you could always, of course, sell that at a profit, hopefully, once the real estate market turns around. And right now, you could get some extremely incredible deals.
Right.
But the question is, though, or do you want, it depends on your personal philosophy, or do you want to just take and rent and have a minimal overhead and then sock that money away and keep it liquid? Because this is the philosophy. You know, while the real estate was going up tremendously, it's always going to be valuable, a valuable investment. That's where I've invested all my money, not in stocks and bonds, but in cement and mortar, right? But the question you have to ask yourself is the only way that real estate is profitable is if you finance out the equity in it or you sell it. But if you have a philosophy of, and this could be one portion of your investment strategy, or you could sock your money away, and even if you put it in a minimal account with small amount of interest, you know, like a 4%, like in Ing or one of those companies,
right.
You know, you'd have all that money liquid. And if you decided to retire, you could say, well, I have $400,000 in the bank, and it cost me $12,000 a year. I could live for the next 20 years of my life without having to worry.
Absolutely.
So the question is, or if you own real estate and that's where your investment is, do you have to sell it to get out of it? And if you sell your school and it's housed in that building, now you're kind of a prisoner to that, because you can't sell the business and say, okay, I'm going to sell you my business, but you need to move out. So that's kind of where I'm in the struggle. I'm in kind of this area where I own and occupy. So I'm fully responsible for myself. And if I want to sell my business, I have to keep the building or I have to get the business to move out and try to sell it that way. So be careful at how you structure yourself or put yourself into the mix, and that's something that you need to really explore.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, very good.
Does that make sense?
Yeah,
because I don't want to give you like one and say absolutely go buy, because, you know, that's one philosophy, or absolutely don't buy because that's another philosophy. You have to do what's right for you, but if you intend on being in your school and teaching yourself for the next 10, 15 years, then I would say absolutely become your own landlord.
Great. Okay.
Was that a good enough answer?
It's a great answer. We just happen to be, my family's personally blessed with zero debt, no mortgage, no rent, no car, any other kinds of debt. So we're thinking
awesome.
this might be the next.
Yeah, because, you know, right now
investment.
You could get deals that are amazing out there. And if you want to talk to me, you know, privately. We could, you could email me. I could talk to you about so many little tricks on getting people. And when I say tricks, I don't mean, you know, tricks that way. But I mean, like, so many ways that you could get people to hold a mortgage for you or finance it 0% down. And even in this society, there are people out there that are just dying to get rid of their inventory of real estate. There are some deals out there to be made if you have the money and you could, you know, and you got good credit. You could jump right in on something amazing. And so I've done three out of my 14 or so buildings on having the owner of the building finance out and become hold his own mortgage. So it was quite beneficial to me to do that. No banks, no closing costs, no crud. So saved a ton. But just email me.
Okay, sure, will.
Any other questions out there? Kathy, you were going to say something before, I think.
No, I think I was just mentioning the phone lines were open.
Hey, no online questions? We have most people online today?
Most people are on the phone today.
That's cool. All right, great. Well, no one else? I'm going once. Don't feel funny. Going twice. Okay. All righty. Well, I don't have much time left because, like I said before, I just kept on going and going and going. So, again, back to our topic. You know, we started off this conversation with how to maximize or get the maximum result in your business or maximum results in your business. The question that I want to leave with you, and, of course, you know my five questions. Don't forget to ask them. Number one, what are you actually doing to market your school? You know, think about this, and I've said this before. Pretend like you have to power the electricity by a generator in your school. And in order to have those lights on, the generator has to constantly be going because once it shuts off, it doesn't go into a battery somewhere and store up energy. The generator runs. Think of your marketing as that generator. You have to ask yourself, what are you doing every day? And when I ask people this, and ask yourself this question, how many hours per week do you put into marketing? Now, you could be running an ad in the paper, but the paper could come out on a Wednesday. It has a certain shelf life, so that might be a few hours, right? You may be able to deliver flyers and put out door hangers. That might be a few hours. You may be able to, I don't know, call people, do a referral program. But when you total it all up, you have to ask yourself, how much time are you actually spending on growing your business? How much time do you focus on? And I would say 90% of a school owner's business is teaching on the floor. Right? That's what they're doing 90% of the time and putting maybe 10% towards growing their business, 10% towards getting new students, 10% towards, you know, and of course 10% adds up, but, you know, small percentages towards, you know, these little things like retail or upgrades or special events, you know, and of course we could have each event with the 100%. So if you're running an event, let's say a parents' night out, what is your plan of action? Put 100% effort into that, or take a person and put them 100% in charge of that event, and they have to market the event. They have to communicate with the parents. They have to set up the event and lay out what's going to go on. They have to build the hype and the excitement and the motivation and the enthusiasm and all of that stuff within your school. And that's essential. Essential when you're doing anything. You know, if you want to build your 3 to 5 year olds up, what are you doing to get that group to grow? What are you doing to market to those parents that have 3 to 5 year olds? Are you, you know, are you going down and leaving flyers on all the cars at, you know, at pickup time during at the nursery school? Are you going down to stand outside of Chuck E. Cheese's and hand out flyers? Are you, you know, asking for other nursery schools to co-op market with you? You know, what are you doing? What do you want to do? Do you want to grow your adult enrollment? Well, where do you go to grow adults? Maybe we could, I know this sounds ridiculous in a way, but why not stand out or have someone stand out the front of a supermarket, you know, with a clipboard and give out a pass and get a name? Or do a little interview and say, are you happy with your weight? Are you happy? Are you in shape? Would you like to burn off stress? All, you know, pre-framed questions. Well, if so, well, let me just give you this two-week membership, you know. What are you doing? Are we just going to sit back? I recently did a one-on-one consulting call with a client, and they've been in business for a few years. I mean, when I say in business, hardly in business. They only have about 15 or 20 students. And I said, what are you doing to market your school? And the guy didn't even know what I was talking about. I said, market, like, do you have business cards? No. Do you have a flyer? No. I've never done any of that stuff, he said. I can't believe that he's actually even stayed open for this amount of time, but he was fueling his business, paying for his business to stay open by having a part-time job. So the question I said to him, well, first things first, go out and get a business cards. You know, go out and get a flyer, even if you did it in crayon. You need to be out there communicating to society that you're even open. People are not going to just discover you. You know, we don't use the media enough. We don't send out press releases on our last promotions. We don't send out marketing to, you know, we don't ask our students if they know anybody, if they're in the PTA, the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Cub Scouts, if they're in a Kiwanis Club, like a Chamber of Commerce. These are the things that we need to look at. So what are you actually doing to market your school? Number two, what have you done lately to grow your business? What are you doing right now to make more money within your own school? Not the old antiquated abacus, the martial art calculator. We're not out there trying to use the equation 100 more students equals 100 more dollars. What could we do better within our organization? And remember this, you're servicing your clients. You know, a great hotel has the massage, has the pool, and has the restaurant all within the hotel. They don't say, go out here and go out there and go. They try to keep it all internal because you service your clients. You want your clients to have the ultimate experience. You want them to be able to say, I want to go back because it's all right there. Like in Vegas, man, they have everything within the hotel, right? You don't even have to leave. You never even have to see sunlight. You could pretty much do it all. Number three, what are you doing that will benefit your bottom line at the end of the year? What are your goals this year? Do you want to just stay where you're at, which is okay because you don't want to go backwards, but what can we do to get a little bit more in through the door? More students, more money, more retail, more special events, et cetera, et cetera. Four, what is it you're doing to prepare yourself for the future? Do you want to be there forever? Do you want to teach every class? Do you want to be, you know, a prisoner to that school? Or do you want to become a business owner? One of my favorite books I read was Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Rob Kiyosaki. If you haven't read it, read it. And if you have read it, read all his other books because they're all phenomenal. But one of them, he talked about cash flow quadrants, you know. And if you take a line and you put a plus sign on a piece of paper and you draw it that way, like a T, in the upper left-hand corner employer or employed. You're an employee of the company. On the bottom left-hand corner is self-employed. On the top right-hand corner, it's business owner. On the bottom right-hand corner, it's investor. You don't want to spend time in the employed category. What we normally do is jump from that category and take a leap of faith and we open our own business. But what we do is we just put ourselves in the category of self-employed. But really, we're employed by ourselves. We're doing all the work. We're working every day. We're there. We're the ones doing it all. Without us, business will fail. We want to learn to jump into the business category, the upper right-hand corner of being a business owner, telling people what to do, putting systems in place, growing our business internally, externally, et cetera, et cetera. And then we want to jump from category of business owner to investor, business owner to investor. Do we always have to stay like I did and jumped in real estate? Could we maybe open up a hot dog stand somewhere? Could you open up a tanning salon? What could you do to take your martial art money that's been a highly profitable business, if so, and move it into some other area that'll kind of bring in, you know, what we call, you know, continual cash flow and, you know, assets to your company. Number five, what works and what doesn't work within your business? What could you do to make those things work better? What could you get rid of that's not working, that you don't have the time to work? Let's get rid of those systems that are draining your operation, that are taking away from your other stuff that you could do better. For example, if you're the greatest martial art teacher and you love to teach and inspire and you're a terrible accountant, what the heck are you doing any accounting? Take the time and grow your school by using your charisma and your teaching. Hire the right people or you know, outsource to the right people to help you in those areas that you're weak at. Don't just keep twiddling your thumbs and hoping for the best. Remember that saying, you know, that luck is not, it's not something that you get, it's something that you make. And that's really it. Kathy, I just want to leave off with that. Any last questions, anybody, real quickly? Not at all? Okay, awesome. Again, I wanted to offer to you guys, we have Elite Consulting, which is one-on-one coaching that I do for 40 minutes per week. You can either do it every single week or twice a month. If you're interested, contact, you know, Member Solutions. We also do 20-minute consulting calls. I do that myself 3 times a month. Kathy does it. We have other people that do it. It's free, free of charge, worth thousands of dollars to you. All you got to do is, you know, is email or call Member Solutions, and they'll set you up with an appointment. And if you have any questions on Elite Consulting or anything else, do not hesitate to email me at renshi.li.ninja@aol.com. That's renshi.li.ninja@aol.com. And remember to ask yourselves those five questions. And if you wanted any of the stuff that I talked about, you know, just email me. You know, we'd be more than happy. I'll be more than happy to zip it right out to you. The 200 guerrilla marketing tips, and of course the you know, I can give you ideas on how to name and, you know, brand your company and develop a logo. And if you're interested in the top 15 hot selling items on retail, and also I could talk to you about setting up your company for sale, and you know, with the philosophy that if you're going to sell it, it'll be sellable. Okay, that's about it. Kathy, thanks so much again. Everybody, it was awesome having you on the line, and I hope this was motivational. And as I say in my Taking It to the Next Level, is gain the power to change your life forever, okay? So I'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Kathy. Thanks,
everybody.
Take care.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.